SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Pharrell has taken over. Let's go. It's Pharrell.
Coast to coast.
Steaks, chicks, stacks. You and I are going to make a lot of money. It's Pharrell, coast to coast.
Back here on Coast to Coast, Keith Urizarry with you in for Scott Pharrell all week long. Love hanging with my dudes here, Mafia and Carver High. All right, so bring in Mafia now. Help us out, kind of recap all that went this entire weekend. It was a good weekend for MMA and boxing. Yeah. I woke up to, and I'm going to be honest with you, didn't get a chance to watch it live. I woke up to the knockout heard round the world by Tank Davis. Yikes.
Yeah, that was a great uppercut by him, and it was a good fight because, you know, in the beginning of the fight, Santa Cruz was kind of controlling it, especially that first round. He came forward and had Davis backing up on his heels and was dominating it. Then Davis started to find his way, started to find his range there and pick the spots where he can, you know, capitalize on Santa Cruz, because we know Santa Cruz is such a, you know, volume puncher. So he started to find those little holes there that he could start to capitalize and throw some of his power shots. And it was still probably Santa Cruz, you know, controlling the fight as far as the scorecards goes. We got into the fifth and sixth. It could have been even, could have been, you know, one round off, depending on how you were looking at it and how you were scoring it. As I saw, you know, a million different ways on Twitter, as per usual, depending on how you were leaning going into the fight. And then all of a sudden, that sixth round, there was just no, you know, ifs, ands, or buts. He catches him right in the corner with that left uppercut, puts him out completely. He falls, you know, underneath the ropes to the point that the ref didn't even get him the count out. The ref just waved it off right away. Once he got down there and saw Santa Cruz completely knocked out, did not start counting, just waved it off, called the fight, and that's it. And Davis, who, you know, this was his biggest test. This was the question that needed to be answered, because the only fight that he had that was against, you know, really a top-level opponent was Gamboa before this, and that was one that went all the way to the 12th round before he knocked him out, as opposed to the other ones where he knocked everyone else out pretty quickly. So Santa Cruz is a guy who fought Abner Maris twice and beat him. He fought Carl Frampton twice and beat one out of two. So he had fought some big names and big fights, and this was the first time that Davis was going to fight, you know, a really cagey veteran like this, and he gets it done in a big way.
All right, so you said test, right? So here's the follow-up to that, though. I know he passed this test, but how impressed should we be with the fight in totality from Davis?
I think we should be very impressed, because not only did he hit the big uppercut, you know, of course that's the one that everyone's going to point to and be the exclamation point on the performance, but he also came in there, and even though Santa Cruz had him backing up in the beginning, then as you got to the second, third, fourth round, you started seeing him play much better defense. He started getting the gloves up. He was blocking a lot of Santa Cruz's punches. There were some that were landing, but it wasn't like everyone was landing and he was in trouble of getting knocked out himself. He was playing good defense, playing smart, being a good boxer. You know, we talked to his trainer before he got on into the fight, you know, earlier in the week, last week, and he said, like, we teach him old school boxing. We teach him how to fight like those guys, where it's not about being just a power puncher. It's about being a boxer, about being a fighter, about, you know, knowing what to do in any situation. And he showed that, because he had a guy coming in and threatening him, you know, throwing tons of punches at him. He weathered the storm. He waited it out, found his spots, and then made it count.
All right, Mafia, take me over to UFC Fight Night results, and let's talk about Silva and Hall. I mean, I go by what you hear from Dana White afterwards, saying that Anderson Silva should never fight again. What was your takeaway from this fight, though?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give Silva credit, though. I mean, Dana kind of shortchanged him, I think, in that comment. They never should have let him in there. Like, he looked good in the beginning of that fight. He was winning the first round, the second round. I was doing in-game live with Kevin Walsh, and, like, you could see the odds on FanDuel change from Hall being minus 220 before the fight started to all of a sudden him being an underdog by we got into the third round. So he was winning the fight on points in the beginning. He had Hall backing up. You know, maybe it was just a respect thing because he wasn't one of his idols. So maybe he was just kind of playing it, you know, softly at first and not wanting to just come out guns blazing right away on this guy. But of course, then Hall eventually starts to land on him at the end of the third, catches him in the fourth, and finishes him. I'm not going to say that he never should have fought ever again, but now at this point in his career, he's now in the last 7+ years, 1-7-1. You know, for a guy who was the greatest of all time and had 10 straight title defenses, that's not what you want him to be, and that's probably time to hang it up for sure. He's tarnished his legacy too much right now.
We welcome in all our radio audience right now. Keith Urizarry on Coast to Coast, joined by Mafia, as always. Glad to have everybody with us, breaking down what happened this weekend in boxing and MMA. Elsewhere on the UFC Fight Night, what else stood out to you?
Greg Hardy looked a lot better than we've seen previously. Greg Hardy looked like the Greg Hardy that we saw in the Contender Series and that we saw earlier in his career in MMA, you know, which a lot of people don't like, obviously, because of his past. But he talked about that after the fight. But first he comes in there. He's a lot more aggressive with Maurice Greene. He knocks him out instead of, you know, a lot of these other fights. He kind of stood back and kind of let the guy come to him. It was more of a counterpuncher because he was a bigger, longer guy. And this one, he was aggressive. He came out. He got the finish. And that's what you expect from this guy and the aggression that he has and the athleticism he has. And then after the fight, he was talking about how, you know, he was thinking about not even stepping into the cage a couple hours before. He was, you know, crying on the dais afterwards in the post-fight press conference saying, you know, everyone's trying to take him down for his past, but, you know, they don't know the truth. And now apparently he's going to try and come out with it and try to, you know, let us all know that he's not the person we think he is. That's a lot of damage to undo from what we've had over the years. We'll see if that happens. But, you know, that's the way he talked about that. And also you had Bryce Mitchell, Thug Nasty, come in there against Andre Touchy Feely, and, you know, his biggest opponent yet. Mitchell was 4-0 before this fight. Now he's 5-0. He wins the fight. He gets the control that he needs, takes down Feely a bunch of times and controls him on the ground. Feely had some good, you know, exchanges on the feet at times, but he shows against a veteran that Mitchell is a up-and-coming prospect to be reckoned with in that division.
Kind of wish Bryce Mitchell then wouldn't have had the press conference he did talking about all the anti-mask stuff. I thought that took a little luster away from that win for him. Got to finish with this, so Ultimate Fighter. It's coming back in March. What can we expect?
We don't know who's coaching yet. Of course, he offered it to Khabib and to Conor. That's what we heard Khabib talking about before the fight in his last weekend, where he's talking about, you know, how they want him to do tough against Conor. He didn't have it. He's like, is it not worth it? I'm not going to give him that attention. Apparently, Conor didn't want to do it either, so they have to figure out coaches. But they're going to start some virtual tryouts, and after a two-year layoff, they're going to bring the fight back, the fight show back, even though it had some lackluster ratings in its last couple seasons. We'll see where it is, you know, what channel they do it on and when it is, all that kind of stuff. But it is coming back for people who are missing it.
Yeah, I think the channel and the time is really what is so crucial. We dive back into the world of the NFL when Adam Kaplan joins me next. Keith Irizarry, Coast to Coast.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back here on Coast to Coast, I am Keith Irizarry. Glad to have you with us. No one better in the business than Adam Kaplan, our Sports Grid NFL insider. Follow him on Twitter. It is Kaplan NFL. What's going on, man? How you been?
Keith, good to talk to you today, my friend. Yeah, it's quite a weekend in the National Football League. We've got trades. We unfortunately have the COVID issues. We've got Monday Night Football. We've got injuries. Yet another dull moment in the National Football League.
Yeah. So I always like to start with positive, but I got to ask the question because you're the guy in the know that would know this. So why is it that Marlon Humphrey and AJ Dillon get tested and all the players are getting tested on Sunday mornings? They get tested and their test results don't come back until Sunday night or Monday morning. Like, why did the NFL and the NFLPA agree to this and not have more rapid tests?
Well, the thing is, now we have daily testing in the National Football League for players. And there's a lag time. It's short. There's a lag time until you get testing back. But the thing, Keith, with players is this. Talking to teams, as I do daily, it's not about what happens in the building. It's about as clean as a process you're going to get. Everybody wears a sensor when they're inside the building. The only time coaches, Keith, could not have their sensors on is when either A, they're alone in their office, or B, they're outside the building and maybe in the parking lot. That's about it. So there shouldn't be anyone getting testing positive inside the building. What you worry about is when the players go home, who are they around? Who are they bringing in their home? That's the issue. And also, are they going out when they really shouldn't be? This is really the NFL's greatest fear coming into the season. But I'll say this about the NFL. They've done a phenomenal job with the NFLPA at limiting exposures, limiting the positive tests as well as they can. But you can only control so much. And that's what we've seen here, because the numbers are going up, you know, the COVID positives are going up, but if you compare it to the number of players in the National Football League, it's a very, very small number.
See, I'll roll with you on that one too, because I actually think the NFL has done a good job. It was just that one little question mark. I just didn't understand why they can't get that test back a little bit quicker, but I guess, you know, that's above my pay grade. I want to dive into...
Go ahead. I was just going to say one thing. there is a lag time, as we were saying before. That's definitely an issue. You know, you're not going to get it back in 20 minutes. It's not like they're going into CVS because they have to test so many players each morning. That's definitely something that has been an issue from time to time. But again, they've done such a good job of limiting it. And the players, by and large, have taken this thing seriously. But when they're outside the building, as we've seen, that's when you start worrying about it, because you don't want them practicing. I know that's what you're alluding to. Well, if they're taking the test early in the morning and they're self-testing at home and they're self-isolating and they're doing the right thing, why should they test positive? And that's the thing with contact tracing. It's the one thing I wanted to add. The contact tracing is so key here, finding out how the players are getting it.
Okay, that does make a lot more sense when you break it down that way. What's interesting about Russell Wilson this season was we came in this year and it was this huge narrative about, he's never gotten an MVP vote. Now he's got 26 touchdowns, and if we go on pace thing, he's on pace for 59 touchdowns. Are you at all surprised at how good Russell Wilson has been this year?
Yeah, Keith, so I had a report before the season started that said, you know, the Let Russ Cook moniker. Well, Pete Carroll, after 2 years, I think at least 2 years, I've been hearing about this, front office and some of the coaches were getting in his ear to let them come out throwing the football instead of trying to be balanced. Because rules, as they are in the National Football League, Keith, favor passing early. Bill Walsh believed it. Bill Belichick has believed it. And more often than not, the teams that come out throwing and score early win. You pass early and you run to win. Whereas Pete Carroll's always believed you win with defense, you come out running, and you control the clock. This isn't the 1990s or 1980s. You got to get up to today's NFL. It is ridiculous what Russell Wilson is doing, and he's unstoppable. DK Metcalf has been incredible. Tyler Lockett had one of the best games we've ever seen at receiver last week against the Cardinals. And there's been no stopping Russell Wilson. And quite frankly, you're seeing the passing numbers up. The average points per game, Keith, are in the 50s now. We never thought we'd see a day when that's happening. So coaches clearly believe, even though the old schoolers are hard to move along here into the 20th century, Pete Carroll was the last of those coaches to embrace it. But give the people credit and got Pete's ear. He did it. And it's working. And Brian Schottenheimer, you know, by the way, a lot of people aren't talking about him. Brian Schottenheimer got a real big knock for running a complicated offense with the Jets. And it was more run-based like his dad. But how about this? They're letting Russ cook, and it's working in Seattle.
I like it a lot. What do you make of the Seattle team, though? If they can figure their defense out, how formidable are they come the postseason? I mean, I guess they're still – we're waiting on Jamal Adams, essentially. But, like, they need to figure something out defensively, too.
And, by the way, two things. You're right on Jamal Adams. He is their best blitzer. And I'm told, though, they are still looking to add another defensive end. They added Carlos Dunlap last week. I'm told they're still calling teams around to get one more defensive end, one more pass rusher. But if you do that and you get Jamal Adams back, this is a different defense. This is a forward-going defense here that could rush the passer. But that's the problem, and that's part of why the Seahawks are throwing so much, is their defense can't stop anybody. I mean, they did a good job against the Niners, but Jimmy G got hurt early. George Kittle broke his foot. I mean, look, they got a break there. But the fact of the matter is, it's fun to watch them. They're going to have to throw to win. I never thought I'd see that in the Pete Carroll era in Seattle, but guess what? It's real, and it's not going to stop.
And it's fun to watch. Let's go over to the Steelers and the Ravens. It lived up to the billing. It was fun to watch. Lamar Jackson and Baltimore looked good early, and then Lamar kind of just stumbled and fell. Is there something to the he can't beat the best teams narrative that now is starting?
You know, here's the thing, and you know, people brought this up, and it's fair game because his playoff numbers are horrendous, and his regular season numbers are fantastic. He's one of my favorite players to watch. I'm sort of a Lamar Jackson truther. I defended him, but he didn't play that well. Talking to people that play the Ravens, they look like a team that didn't have an offseason, that had an abbreviated training camp and no preseason, because talking to a pretty good Ravens source, Keith, they were going to probably expand the passing game with Lamar this season, but it hasn't really happened. They need to get going here. They need to be more diverse in their pass game. You know, it's hard to do this when you're trying to do all of it in the regular season. It's hard. It's hard to expand your passing game when you haven't had it in an offseason. I think that's really impacting them. Quite frankly, they probably need to do something here, maybe to add another piece at the wide receiver position. Nothing to substantiate that, but they need to get the passing game going. even the run game is not as been dynamic. It's been tough to watch them, and that puts so much on their defense. And now, as you know, they've lost Ronnie Stanley, their outstanding left tackle, to a dislocation of his ankle, and that and broken ankle. That's really problematic. Orlando Brown, their right tackle, played left tackle in this game, and that Tyree Phillips, their starting guard, has got yet another injury. That's a problem. So this team now, that they're still obviously one of the best wild card teams right now. If you look at the three teams that probably will get in, they're clearly the best of them, but they're nowhere near the Steelers right now. I know it was a tight game, could have gone anywhere, but with their injury issues and their offense not getting to where it needs to, they're simply not as good as the Steelers.
He is Adam Kaplan. Follow him on Twitter, Kaplan NFL. Joining me, Keith Irizarry on Coast to Coast. All right, then when you look on the other side for the Steelers, did we learn anything about them yesterday as they continue to be the only undefeated team in the NFL?
Yeah, look, it's funny. When we were talking to Pharrell on Friday, I did pick the Steelers. I said, look, very clear to me that their secondary is not good enough, particularly corner. Safety, they're great, but corner is the issue for them. You need to come out throwing if you're going to beat the Steelers. And you were talking about the Ravens. They had some success early, but they just were not consistent with their pass game. That's the only way that they don't go far in the playoffs, is if their corners let them down. Joe Hayden's a little bit older. Nelson's okay. Steven Nelson, formerly of the Chiefs, but they need to play a little bit tighter coverage there. James Conner's been a great story. Their offensive line's hanging in there despite some injuries. They're really well coached, by the way. Randy Fichter, their offense coordinator, does a great job. The one issue they have on offense, though, their inability to get the explosive plays downfield, 25 yards or more. They don't have that burner at wide receiver, but they're good enough to win every week. And you know what, another thing I love about them? They win on the road. When you can win on the road, Keith, in the National Football League, and you do it consistently, you're an elite team, and they certainly are. The NFL's only defeated team for a reason. They're really, really good.
Yeah, and then on the flip side from what Baltimore has done, right? Like, Baltimore doesn't give Lamar many weapons. Pittsburgh's got three wide receivers that are legit NFL wide receivers, some runners as well. Adam's going to stay with us on Coast to Coast. Coming up next, we'll talk about the Bills and the Patriots. Want to dive into what we saw from Carson Wentz and the Eagles, as well as the Dallas Cowboys, and so much more. Keep it locked right here. It is Coast to Coast. I am Keith Irizarry, in for Scott Farrell all week long. Be right back.
Cool. Bagels and bad beats.
He didn't have the success again with the four turnovers that he's had against the Cincinnati Bungles of the world. Against the real good teams, will he be able to do all those things? Maybe not.
The Sports Grid Network.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Oh, yeah, we are back here Coast to Coast. I am Keith Irizarry. Adam Kaplan still with us. Follow him on Twitter, Kaplan NFL, SportsGrid NFL Insider. All right, so the Bills and the Patriots, this is the way I viewed this game. I thought the Bills needed to come in, prove a point that this is now our division. Bye-bye, Patriots. I don't think they proved. I know they won, but I don't believe they proved that point.
I would agree with you. They've not played especially well lately. Yeah, they were able to win the last 2 weeks to beat the bad Jets team where they couldn't score. That was disappointing. This game, they barely won. Cam Newton, look, he's going out a drive and tie it or win it. So, yeah, they're not playing especially well, but you know what? The Patriots have two wins. This is almost hard to understand. I know Cam Newton started off the season well, but he's been struggling lately. I said on Sports Grid a couple weeks ago, you know, the word around the league was, look, when you're trying to learn a new offense, which is really complex, when you don't have an offseason, you can't expect any quarterback to come in there and learn Josh McDaniels' offense in a matter of 3 to 4 weeks. It's just not possible. And I think Cam has been inconsistent. I don't think there's any timing with he and his receivers or tight ends. That's been a problem. They've had injury issues at wide receiver. Julian Edelman out now. They haven't gotten much out of their tight end. You know, the other thing is, if you look at Bill Belichick and what he's done with this roster the last two seasons, where's the major help at wide receiver and tight end? They did draft two tight ends, but they need a veteran tight end. I think that's something they could have done. You just don't have enough help on offense. They've had some issues on the offensive line with injuries. But so is every other team. So this is the transition that they're having, and clearly they're going to have to look for a quarterback next season.
They are clearly going to need to. All right, so now Buffalo, though. You said it's been, you know, a little bit of a mishmash as of late. From a fantasy standpoint, and I'm all in on Zach Moss now. I look at this as a guy that split the carries with Devin Singletary, but he also gets two touchdowns. So I'm kind of all in on Zach Moss now. Where should we be viewing him at as right now?
Yeah, so I'd said before the season started that Zach Moss was a guy that, from what I was hearing, is probably the time split in terms of touches was going to be 60-40 for Devin Singletary. You know what, Keith? Devin Singletary has not had a great season. Now, he did well in this game against the Patriots. Everyone seems to run well against the Patriots. Moss is what they call an inside grinder, gets to the second level. And what the Bills told me before the season started, based on their training camp, was interesting. They said they didn't realize that Moss could catch the ball very well because if you studied his college tape, he wasn't asked to do it very much at Utah. But when he was asked to do it, he did a good job, and you're seeing he's catching the ball well. This is going to be a timeshare. Not only is it a timeshare, they're splitting touches in a on a drive. Like, you don't typically see that with two young running backs. First guy gets a couple carries, and then another guy comes in. So, yeah, this Zach Moss has been a great story. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you another name. Gabriel Davis, the rookie, they absolutely love. They're lining him up at every wide receiver position. I'm told, Keith, he's so smart, he's actually now lining up a little bit in the slot. So that tells you how smart he is. Despite a COVID offseason, this kid's doing so well, he's lining up at all three wide receiver positions.
Wow, that is some good insight there on the Buffalo Bills. That's crazy. All right, so now what's the tape telling you about Carson Wentz? Because this is a guy that through the first couple of years was, okay, I'm not going to make any mistakes, and I'm going to utilize some of my athleticism and get the ball to playmakers. As you watch him this season and last night, what are we seeing?
Keith, I've asked this question that you asked me. What is the problem with him? The prevailing thought with current and former players and some personnel people I respect from other teams, he clearly is pressing. He's trying to do too much. Yeah, they've had a lot of injuries. DeSean Jackson, Alshon Jeffrey, the projected two starters. Though I'm told Jeffrey's expected to return after the bye against the Giants. I said expected. It doesn't mean he will. Alshon keeps they think he's coming back, but he doesn't. But getting back to your question about Wentz, I think he's trying to do too much. Every game it's the same thing. And he's got a league lead, 16 total turnovers. You can't have that, man. You cannot win the National Football League when you continue to turn the ball over. Four in this past game. The fumbles, four lost fumbles this season, 12 interceptions. You never want to lead the league, Keith, in those categories, and he is. And they're lucky, though, that they've won the last two games. The strange thing is, his best game of the season probably was against Pittsburgh, the NFL's best football team, who have a pretty good defense. But this Travis Fulgham, without Travis Fulgham, number 13, they're not even in any of these games. That's how important Travis Fulgham has been since he was claimed off waivers from the Packers in late August.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a lot of credit on that one, because Travis Fulgham is a guy that just a couple of weeks ago, I know you were on the radio with Jeff Ratcliffe on Sirius XM, and we're breaking that down. And then Jeff was telling me like 3 days later, dude, just so you know, like Travis is not losing this spot. Kaplan told me this. And now 2.5 weeks later, whatever it is, Travis Fulgham looks like their best weapon. Where did this kid kind of come from? Because, he did come out of nowhere.
He did. So he went to Old Dominion, which I'm gonna be honest here. I didn't know they played football. I only know ODU as a basketball school growing up.
The Monarchs.
College basketball guy. Yeah, the Monarchs, right. But I and ladies basketball. I didn't know that they played football. But he was a kid who didn't really have a traditional football background, played soccer and some other sports. His father supposedly was in the CIA. He won't admit it, but he was interviewed by the Philadelphia Inquirer. And he's a guy that pretty sharp family, and so's Fulgham. But what happened was with the Lions, Keith, he was a sixth-round pick coming out of ODU, super athletic, 6'2.5", really smart kid, but did not have a traditional background. He didn't play a lot of football growing up, so you weren't really sure about him. And he didn't get it done with the Lions. They cut him, I think, three times. The Packers, he was only there for a week or two. They cut him. And this is the funny thing. I'm told the Eagles had a third-round grade on this player. So here's the question, Keith, as we move forward here. Why in the world did the Eagles cut him when they cut down to 53, think about this. If somebody else claimed him, he would never be an Eagle. Well, it talk about luck or serendipity here. I mean, it's one of the luckiest things. And you give him credit because they had him scouted correctly, had a third round grade on him. And boy, he looks like a first round pick right now. Here's another little fact. You know, he's 25 years old as a second year player. He's a little bit older. He's one of the oldest receivers now of the young players that they have on the football team.
It's such a cool story. You love to hear those, because, I mean, too many times we hear the negative stuff, but we hear the good stuff there. Sure. Again, he is Adam Kaplan joining me, Keith Irizarry, on Coast to Coast. Follow him on Twitter. It's Kaplan NFL. Continue rolling along through some of the games yesterday. Let's get to some negative here. The Javon Wims haymakers and snatching of a chain. I don't know. From what you're hearing, the spitting in the face thing, did that definitely happen, or is that just Javon's word?
It's everything, though. You just described it. It's everything. And I talked to a bear source. He's actually a pretty good kid in terms of being a good teammate and all that. Now, he could challenge this ruling. But right now, it's a 2-game suspension. John Runyon, by the way, of all people, handed it down. Do we remember John Fonley with the Eagles?
Oh, yeah. And,
The Titans. And I know John. I don't want to say he was a dirty player, but he certainly was very physical, to say the least, with Michael Strahan, of all things. But look, he's basically their fifth receiver, but a good special teams player. He's a guy's got good size. He's developed for them as a backup receiver, but you never want to lose any of your players. And yeah, it was. You talk about the spitting. It's hard to tell sometimes, but the fact of the matter is, John Runyon saw the tape because they have access to it, and he ruled because he knew what he saw, and he ruled and he handed down that ruling. And by the way, that was a tough loss for them. I give the Bears credit for fighting back with Nick Foles, and their offense has struggled. Their offensive line has been horrendous, and if they're going to do anything at the trade deadline by 4 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, Keith, the Bears must get help on the offensive line.
Yeah, I was trying to look at the Bears and see if they were a team that could be a buyer or at the point where they're just seller, or whether they just see like, all right,
they
you know
buyer.
What
yeah,
we
they
are. They have to be a buyer. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. They have to be a buyer.
O-line.
And the offensive line is the way to go. New Orleans, they're another one that I find tricky. Now, listen, no Michael Thomas, so I don't know if it's totally fair to bash Drew Brees, but it's clear that Drew Brees is on his last legs right now. And it doesn't seem like he has the weapons to kind of maybe mask the warts that he has right now.
Well, right now, Keith, they were in this game, where they still won on the road. You know, they almost blew it, but they won. They were without three of their top four receivers. Emmanuel Sanders is on the COVID list, so they're hopeful he'll come back this week. You mentioned Michael Thomas. He has two injuries. The high ankle is almost healed, but he's got another injury. And Marquez Callaway, they love, who's a undrafted free agent at the University of Tennessee, who really did great a couple games ago. He's been a great story for them. But when you're without these guys, it's hard to win. And their defense, you know, another thing is, and they made the trade for Quan Alexander today, who's coming back from a high ankle sprain. Their defense has not played as well as they had hoped. It's getting better, but it's not the dominant defense that they were expecting, forcing the turnovers, getting the high pressure on the quarterback. Though they got some. They got 5 sacks, actually, against Nick Foles. But consistency with their defensive line has not been there. But if you get all these guys back at wide receiver and get Marcus Davenport going, by the way, and remember, they were on Jadeveon Clowney, which tells you that they knew that their defensive line needed help. Now, I picked them to get to the Super Bowl before the season started. If I can amend that, I think I'd put tonight's Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who play at the Giants, right there. In fact, I'd put them over the Saints right now. They're playing better football.
Yeah, I love the Buccaneers. Not even going to have you break that game down because I think it's going to be a walk-off. I got about a minute with you. More impressive performance yesterday was Dalvin Cook's 4 touchdowns or Patrick Mahomes' ho-hum another 5 touchdowns?
Well, I got to say Dalvin Cook, because remember, he was coming off of an injury, a groin injury, and you knew he was going to play because Mike Zimmer made it clear he was going to play, but you didn't know how well he could do. And the other thing is, you know, the Vikings have been terrible on defense because of injury. I mean, they traded Ngakoue. They have no pass rushers left, really, of any sorts, and they're down a bunch of corners. But give them credit. Dalvin Cook was absolutely incredible, exciting. It wasn't just the touchdowns. It's the way that he ran the football. Boy, do they need that, and he got his contract extension. Look, he gets hurt a lot, but the guy is what they call a baller. The guy gets the job done. He's a terrific football player. You mentioned fantasy. It's been incredible. Can you imagine going against him yesterday? Your day was over if you're going against him.
Yes. Luckily, I did not square off against Dalvin Cook in any of my leagues, so I'm happy about that. Adam, you are the best. I know we'll talk again later this week. I want to pick your brain about the young quarterbacks in the NFL later this week. All right.
You got it.
All right. Sounds good. There he is, the great Adam Kaplan, our Sports Grid NFL insider on Twitter. It is Kaplan NFL. I am Keith Irizarry. It's Coast to Coast. We're talking more NFL coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back here on Coast to Coast, it is Keith Irizarry with you in for Scott Farrell all week long. Man, that was a good spot with Adam Kaplan, some great intake there. I'll tell you, he was so ahead of the curve on Travis Fulgham. I don't do that with every guest that I have. I don't always, you know, like stroke their egos. But to be fair, he was so ahead of the curve on Fulgham that if you weren't listening to him, you didn't pick him up on your waiver wire and you missed out. So hopefully you're paying attention. He's telling you, listen, what was the nugget he just dropped? Gabriel Davis. So if he's still out there, potentially a guy that you want to go check out. And I know that Carver High, as our resident Buffalo Bill fan, will be happy if Gabriel Davis turns out to be an absolute superstar. All right, so we are now, what is it, 5:40? So we are less than 24 hours away from the NFL trade deadline. Had a couple of deals today. Quan Alexander going to the Saints, coming off an injury. We'll see what he can do. He's an active linebacker, a guy that can do some things. Maybe he can help New Orleans a little bit. And then Desmond King, what a fall from grace. So you're talking about someone who was drafted in 2017, becomes a Pro Bowler, looks like he's going to become excellent, then almost gets kind of cast aside when Chris Harris is there, and then gets himself back into a nickel spot for the Chargers, but never really seemed to fit this year in what the LA Chargers are doing. He's now with the Tennessee Titans. The Titans definitely need some help. We've seen their defense have some issues, so I think there was a smart move by the Tennessee Titans. But now we got to figure, we got to prognosticate. So I don't know exactly which ones he's given me, but we'll bring on Carver High, and Carver High's got a whole bunch of questions for me. And we're going to try to figure out who's getting traded, who might get traded, what teams are going to be buyers and sellers, all the such. What's up, Carver High? What do you got for me?
Yeah, we always love trade deadlines, right, Keith? Because it's exciting. You want there to be a lot of moves. And generally, the NFL, before the last couple of years, there never was. But it's gotten exciting the last few years. Teams are actually doing some things. Let's start with wide receivers, because I feel like, Keith, there's a lot of wide receivers out there who could go tomorrow. Golden Tate, A.J. Green, John Ross, Marvin Jones, Will Fuller. Out of all these guys, Keith, right now, and I think a couple could, but who do you think most likely to get moved out of this wide receiver group?
On that list, I actually think two are going to get moved. So I think John Ross is the clear one. He is so unhappy in Cincinnati, a former top 10 pick. He's basically been relegated to not mattering in that offense, and partially his fault for continuously getting hurt. But they've got receivers there. They've got weapons for Joe Burrow, and they don't seem to have any need for John Ross. So I'll say John Ross, but maybe the more surprising one, but not if you look at contractual things. And I think that's important too. I talk about that with fantasy stuff too, like coming into seasons, who's playing for a contract, who might have a big year. One of the reasons why, like, coming in, I was all in on Kenny Galladay. I was all in on a guy like Allen Robinson. Had some injuries on both of them. But anyway, I think Marvin Jones could easily get dealt. He's also starting to, yesterday he played well, but he's starting to get phased out of that offense just a touch. He's going to be a free agent in the offseason. I don't think that Detroit's going to be, you know, hammering down the door to give him a new contract. So I think Marvin Jones gets dealt. Golden Tate is on the fence there. I love that you threw that out there. I don't think AJ Green. I think AJ Green stays now. I think that he was a little annoyed early on in this season. He was getting targets, but he wasn't getting great catches. I think he's kind of pulled back on his desire to be traded. I think Cincinnati keeps him. So gun to head, I go Marvin Jones, and I will go with John Ross. I think both of them get dealt.
Everybody loves big names, Keith. They want to see big names get moved. Now, generally names get thrown around and you hear, well, we're not trading that guy. It's not going to happen. You've kind of heard two of the guys I'm about to mention with Atlanta, Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. Between those two, J.J. Watt of the Texans, Michael Thomas of the Saints, and Stephon Gilmore, whose name has been out there a bit, of these big names, Keith, do you see any of them getting moved by 4 p.m. East tomorrow?
What a list, and for our TV audience, you're seeing this graphic. I mean, you read these names down, and it's essentially who's going to go into the Hall of Fame at some point when their careers are over. All right, so I'll tell you this. I think the Texans should trade J.J. Watt. I know that's blasphemy. I know that he's Mr. Houston. He's done so much for that area, right? But they are not in a win now mode. They've spent a lot of money on some other parts as well. I don't know if J.J. wants to leave, but if he said, sure, If I were the Texans, I almost feel like I owe it to J.J. Watt for all that he's done. And let's be honest, he's no longer the superstar that he was. He's not the guy that's, you know, dominating anymore. Continue every single year, seemingly gets hurt. But I don't know, a team like the Seattle Seahawks could use some help on defense, right? So, like, I would trade him. He won't get dealt. Man, let me look through the rest of the names. Stephon Gilmore, if it wasn't for this recent knee injury, I was of the belief that they were maybe going to trade him. They won't. Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, I think they're both just too expensive, and I don't think any team's going to want to take that on. And then Michael Thomas, the problem is this injury situation for him. So I'm going to say no. So I'm going to say none, but what I'm going to tell you is the Texans should trade J.J. Watt. Is that did I just cheap out there?
Not really. I agree with you. I think that they should too. And you're right about Gilmore. I think if he didn't get banged up, he was going to get dealt. I've watched him. Being a Bills fan, before he went to New England, Keith, I watched Gilmore make what you would call business decisions out on the field before he knew that he was going to be changing teams. You look at the tape before this week when he didn't play, you could say that Gilmore has been making some of those business decisions with the Patriots as well. Quarterbacks. Everybody loves quarterbacks. There's one team, Keith, I could think of off the top of my head that needs a quarterback because I watched Ben DiNucci play quarterback for them last night, and you don't know if Andy Dalton's going to be back anytime soon. Let me throw you some potential quarterbacks out here. Now, Ryan Fitzpatrick was playing well for the Dolphins. They now have Tua in there. Tyrod Taylor had the unfortunate situation with the punctured lung. Herbert goes in and takes over for him. Dwayne Haskins, we know his story. I don't know if you'd want him anyway if you needed a quarterback. And I put Cam Newton there because, look, the ride could be over here. New England might know they're not making it. Maybe there is a taker for Cam out there, even though he has not played well the last few weeks. Anybody here on this list could give some quarterback help here, Keith.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tyrod Taylor very well could get out of LA, the punctured lung or rib, whatever it was, opened the door for Justin Herbert. I think Taylor can help someone. Taylor would clearly be better than what Dallas has right now. We don't know when Andy Dalton's going to be back. If we're going to go on the Dallas side of things, Cam Newton would work. I don't believe the Dolphins are going to trade Ryan Fitzpatrick because I was actually having a conversation with a couple of buddies through text about this. And one of them was like, well, I'm just mocking his voice right now, even though it was through text. That's what I do. But he was basically like, oh, well, if you're going to start Tua, then what do you need Ryan Fitzpatrick? Because you do need a backup. And God forbid anything happens to Tua, Dolphins are right in the thick of things for the playoffs. I think Fitzpatrick is a good role model, a good mentor. I don't trade Fitzpatrick. Haskins is going to get dealt if someone's willing to take him. And they're going to get like a sixth or a seventh round pick at most. Otherwise, Haskins is going to get cut or traded away in the offseason for, you know, some sort of conditional pick. You threw Cam Newton on there, and it blew my mind because he should get traded. And the Patriots should trade him, and the Patriots should say, we're going to let Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer be our quarterback the rest of the year. And if we win three games, we're in a good spot to maybe get Justin Fields in this upcoming draft, or the kid from North Dakota State, Trey Lance, I think his name is, the other quarterback there. And Cam Newton, if he could learn the playbook for Dallas, we talked about it earlier in the show, right? Like if you told me that Cam Newton would have worse weapons in New England than he's ever had, and he once had Kelvin Benjamin as his 1,000-yard receiver, if you throw him into a Dallas offense and just say, don't make mistakes, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, Ezekiel Elliott, Tony Pollard, and Dalton Schultz has not been that bad, Cam Newton would be such an uptick in Dallas. And I actually think that he's still an uptick over Andy Dalton. So who does get traded? I say Dwayne Haskins gets traded tomorrow. No one else does. Cam Newton should.
Buyers and sellers. Who is going to be the most active team tomorrow? Now, to be fair, the buyers list, Keith, I could probably think of like seven or eight other teams other than the three I've got here. Arizona, Green Bay, and the Raiders, who are now 4-3 after a win yesterday, they could be in the mix. Who's going to sell? We've already seen the Jets. Avery Williamson gone. McClendon gone. The Jets are already starting to sell off. The Patriots, possible fire sale there. Who knows? The Texans maybe too. Who's going to be the biggest buyers or sellers, Keith?
All right. Biggest buyer is going to be the Packers. And it's not a routine thing for them, but in their heart of hearts, they have to realize they did no service for Aaron Rodgers this offseason, right? They added Devin Funchess, who then decided not to play because of COVID-19 and just decided to bypass the season. You know, good choice by him for you know, family reasons, right? That being said, you draft Jordan Love. You don't draft any wide receivers. You get A.J. Dillon, who you really, on this team, did not need when you have Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams, and you could have gotten other weapons. And now Aaron Rodgers, you know, albeit struggled yesterday and has been a little up and down as of late, is playing on an MVP caliber level. Get the guy a weapon. And I think, we didn't even mention Will Fuller yet. Like, Will Fuller... Mm-hmm. Brandon Cooks, Kenny Stills, there's three wide receivers in Houston. I know that, you know, probably, you know, Merciless is more likely to get dealt out of Houston because he doesn't have as much for on the defensive side of things. But if any of those three wide receivers became available for Green Bay, they immediately make that offense better. As for Sellers, I don't, in my heart of hearts, I just don't believe the Patriots can do it. Like, I don't think that Belichick has that in him. I know that he's always been ahead of the curve where he's sold off on players earlier than most people thought. So I'm going to say the Jets will continue to sell. They'll sell everything that they can. And I think the Texans would probably be the bigger seller then after that.
Think about it with the Patriots though, Keith. Like, you know, people are talking about them as sellers. Aside from Stephon Gilmore and maybe Cam Newton if they made him available, what are you getting off of that team? Look at it. Everybody's opted out. Edelman is hurt. They don't. Who are you buying off of the New England Patriots right now, other than Gilmore?
Right? Yeah, there's not much. You know, for all the people out there, and today's been a big bash Bill Belichick day. And if you notice, now I'm from New York, right? Like, I say this all the time that I'm supposed to hate everything about Boston and New England. I don't root for them, right? I don't feel like this is a bash Belichick moment. What does he have? The cupboard is bare when 8 players opt out and there's other injuries. Like, what is there? What was he supposed to do?
He also lost the greatest quarterback of all time. You know, you got to remember that too. Who, by the way, is playing tonight. He's playing tonight. Yes. You got to have a pick for the game tonight. We're almost done today. Do you have a pick? Giants, Bucks, tonight in the Swamp in New Jersey.
Yeah, the line is, it still 12? No, it's 12 and a half now. All right, so it's up to 12 and a half. I'm still gonna go Buccaneers, go over 12 and a half. They're gonna win by like 180 tonight. Not really, but I say the Buccaneers win by 17 tonight. I'm gonna say 38-21 is the final score.
An over too from Keith. A little over tonight for the Giants and the Bucks. Yeah. Hey, FanDuel odds boost tonight. Gronk to score a touchdown and the Bucks to win plus 330, Keith. There you go. FanDuel odds boost tonight.
Do it. Put the money in. Do it. I'm all in on that one. I love that one. Oh my goodness, that's great. All right, when we get back, we can talk a little bit more about that Bucks-Giants game if you guys want. And there's also just been some crazy stuff. Baseball right now, got a bunch of free agents or non-free agents out there. And the legend, Sean Connery, passed away yesterday. We might talk a little bit about him. Wow, that was a tough one. Keith Irizarry, Coast to Coast.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, Keith Irizarry back with you, Coast to Coast, wrapping things up. Color me surprised, okay? So Giancarlo Stanton, he wears pinstripes, right? And dude was once one of the most feared hitters in baseball, but now dude can't stay healthy. And dude makes a lot of money, and this dude decided not to opt out, obviously. So he's accepting the remainder of the 7 years and $218 million left on his deal. Giancarlo Stanton, hey, again, I'm not going to knock you hustle, man. Someone was willing to pay you that money, the Marlins, and someone was willing to take on like the Yankees, and you haven't really lived up to the contract, but who really cares? Now, I will say this. Giancarlo Stanton was really good in the postseason. He was the best hitter for the Yankees. That is a lot of money. Carver, hi. You had this John Lester story. Tell our listeners about John Lester, and I guess he's the king of the beers.
Yeah, John Lester over the weekend went out and bought over 3,000 beers for Cub fans in Chicago. He told them, these are the three bars, these are the times, it's on my credit card, I'm going to take care of it. The second bar, the credit card company, called Lester and asked him if it was a fraudulent charge. He said, no, it's all good, I'm buying beers for everybody. Basically, Keith, his goodbye to the city of Chicago. Nice job by Lester.
You know, I like it a lot. I mean, he's made a lot of money, and we will remember him as, you know, a Red Sox. But I think, you know, a lot of what we remember him is for the Chicago Cubs and what he was able to do with the Cubbies. So good job there. We did mention that the legendary actor Sean Connery passed away yesterday at 92. So condolences out there, and so many memories that if you watch movies and SNL with the skits, they were awesome as well. Thank you, everybody, here for Mafia and Carver High and everyone at Sports Grid. I am Keith Irizarry. Remember, if you can't trust me, how can you trust yourself? Be back with you all week long. We'll break down that Bucks and Giants game, the over and more than 12.5. Let's go, Bucks. Later.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.